Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, like the bar on the TV show Cheers, sometimes you just want to go where everybody knows your name, and that's certainly true in a small town. I'm so glad to have with us today to talk about small towns, Greg Peck. He is a retired opinion page editor of the Janesville Gazette, author of a couple books. His early book was Death Beyond the Willows. His new book is Memories of Marshall, Ups and Downs of Growing Up in a Small Town. Part of the sale of every book of his goes to the Marshall Area Historical Society. So how important are historical societies to you and your community? Are you still friends with the people you grew up with? What's the best thing about living in a small town or a small community? I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Greg Peck, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Why did you decide to donate some of the profits from your book to the local historical society?
Well, actually, I'm donating all the profits from the new book to the historical society. I self-published it, so the cover price is $13.95. And because I self-published it, I can get copies of it printed for about $4 a book, which nets $10 in profits to the Historical Society for each book that I sell directly. And the reason I did that was because, twofold actually, the Historical Society was really supportive of my first book, Death Beyond the Willows, which was a true story of a 1927 wedding day tragedy that occurred to a couple that were wed in Marshall and died on their wedding day in Portage. And the Historical Society called me up a couple months after my book came out and said, hey, would you be interested in narrating a bus tour of key sites in your book? And I kind of chuckled and said, well, sure, if you think you can fill a bus full of people interested in seeing it, I'd be happy to do that. So we announced it, and it sold out in 2 weeks. And they said, would you do a second one? And I said, sure. And we filled that one up, too. And we did a third bus tour the following year, which was the 80th anniversary of the tragedy. Now, we went to Cottage Grove, Sun Prairie, Marshall, and Portage on those trips. And, you know, I got to know the people in the Historical Society and realized their passion for preserving history. And the museum in Marshall is in the old fire station. I can still remember fire trucks rolling. One fire truck rolling out of that station when I was a kid, right on Main Street. It doesn't look like a fire station today because they have a nice big picture window in the front instead of a roll-up door. But it's a beautiful little building, and it's just chock full of memorabilia from Marshall. I have not had the time to just sit up there and spend an entire day reviewing things, but I'd love to do that because it's just amazing. And every time I do go in there, I see stuff from people that I know, people that I knew, my ancestors, other people's ancestors, and it's just neat.
Why is it important to keep these memories alive?
Well, I think we can't understand where we've been and where we're going if we don't understand the history that behind our community, and that's why I think it's so important to, you know, like even to teach school kids, you know, like, you know, they all understand Wi-Fi and cell phones and all that stuff, but they don't understand back when you had party line telephones and ringer washers that you had to work, or even back in the days before ringer washers when you might use a stone to clean clothes. I think it's important to know those kinds of things, and it's just amazing to me the types of artifacts that they have, especially in the museum in Marshall, and I'm sure it's very similar in a lot of other small communities.
Yeah, well, I was a Cottage Grove kid, so I grew up outside Cottage Grove, but that was my community, and gave a talk at the Cottage Grove Historical Society a few years back about growing up in the Cottage Grove area, and it was fun for me just to actually have to force myself to think back, to think of all of the things I did growing up in Cottage Grove. And it was a good experience for me. I hope it was. It seemed to be a good experience for the crowd that heard me talk. But the whole business of a small town is, and growing up near or in a small town, it was lots of fond memories for me. Debbie in Knife River, Minnesota, has a comment for us, I think, that relates to that. Debbie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, we can.
Oh, what a fun show. Thank you. Well, anyway, we live in Knife River, and it's a town of about 300 people on the shores of Lake Superior. And you know, there's a lot of fun things about it. But, you go for a walk every day, and you see people as you're walking. In fact, you sometimes can't even get a good walk because every few minutes you run into somebody. And you have to talk about what's going on. And it just feels like a large family. We have one church in town, and, we have both Republicans and Democrats that go to that church, about half-half, I think. I don't really know. And anyway, we all get along, believe it or not, without any problems. The only thing that we disagree on fairly strongly is whether to feed the deer or not to feed the deer. And so you can't really talk about that, but otherwise
it's okay. Well,
otherwise, anything's okay. Yeah.
If you can talk politics up there, you're doing well.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Debbie, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call for sure. Well, there's probably a lot of people like her.
Sure. Yeah. Marshall was, the population was 736 when I was growing up there, because I lived just a stone's throw from Fireman's Park, and right down the street was Highway 19 and heading out of town towards Sun Prairie, and the population sign said 736. And my high school class was just over 70 people, and we lost a couple people here and there, and so it was between 70 and 75, somewhere in there. You know, you knew everyone, even if you didn't necessarily hang out with everybody. I mean, some guys were farmers, you know, and so they were working the farms. But I lived in the village, and even though I wished I could have lived on the farm that my dad grew up on, but growing up in the village was different. You had more free time to hang out and maybe get into mischief once in a while. And of course, a lot of those stories made the book, because I think if you're not real and you don't give the details that might maybe reveal something about yourself and your personality, and maybe even an embarrassing way in certain times, you know, you're not being truthful, and people can see through that, and it's not really a good story then.
No, you're.
So I'm willing to acknowledge my childhood mistakes.
So why did you actually, I mean, what was the motivation? Well, you know, you write about several deaths of classmates and so forth. Was that part of it, or what was the motivation?
That really was the start of it. I mean, I had a couple classmates that died several years ago, both on the same year, and they were guys that I hung around with. One of them I hung around with a lot at his house when we were in junior high school. Another guy was, like I said, a farm kid, so I didn't hang around with him in high school, but I had been to Canada fishing with him several times, because he married the sister of one of our other classmates who I'd been going to Canada with, so the three of us were going together. And both these guys died suddenly, and I wrote a blog for the Janesville Gazette about that, and about, geez, you know, guys are slipping away, here we are in our 50s. And then after I retired, a couple other guys died. Two guys died of cancer that I played basketball with, and were in my circle of six best friends from high school. And then still another guy died. He had taken a fall and had some blood clots apparently, and just died suddenly in the hospital. And he was he stood up in my first wedding, and we kind of lost touch through the years, and I didn't quite understand why. And I wrote a little eulogy to him too, and I sent it to his widow, and she was touched by it. And I asked if I could share it with some of my classmates, and she said sure. And some of these classmates said, "Wow, Greg, that was really nice." And so I thought, well, they probably haven't read the other ones I wrote about these other guys because they're not reading the Janesville Gazette's website. So I sent those to them. And a couple of people said, "Wow, Greg, these are really nice. You ought to consider compiling these into some sort of booklet or something." And I started thinking about it, and I'd written many stories about Marshall through the years, some of them published and some of them not published. And I started thinking, geez, maybe I could compile this into some worthwhile booklet. And with Death Beyond the Willows, that title came to me long into the process. In fact, I'd already found a small publisher that initially published it before I came up with that title. But the idea of Memories of Marshall, Ups and Downs of Growing Up in a Small Town, came to me almost instantly with that cover image. If you've seen the book.
I love the cover.
Yeah.
The silo falling down and everybody running.
Right. The Peck family farm, my dad and an older cousin, Roger Peck, knocked that tile silo down, and they kind of thought they'd knock it down like a tree. You know, you knock rows of tiles out in the bottom, kind of like you notch in a tree, and it would tip over. And it just kind of kept hanging there, and there were only about three or four tiles still left holding the thing up. And there was a neighbor, farm neighbor, had his new pickup truck parked next to the machine shed there. And someone said, "Geez, Marvin, you might want to move your pickup truck in case this thing falls the wrong way." So he does, and they knock out one more tile, and down it comes right where the pickup truck had been sitting. So it was a good thing that he moved it.
Oh, man, I tell you what.
And then I tell a story, too, about that machine shed. It was a combination machine shed, granary, and chicken coop, a really long building. And my dad and I started knocking it down. Of course, my dad's doing most of the work. I'm just kind of tagging along. I was maybe, you know, 10 or 12, somewhere in there. And we had an accident with that project that almost killed us. And I explained that in the book, too. So that was almost tragic.
Well, we have a number of people who want to visit with you and with everybody else. So let's take a call here. Jay in Minocqua, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Larry Mueller. I really enjoy your program. You address such interesting and unique topics, and what a great book topic. Thank you very much. Just a reflection. I grew up in a little town in northern Minnesota called Moose Lake, but because of my career, I travel all over the place to a lot of big cities, Minneapolis, Chicago, Boston, Seattle, Omaha. And I have to say that in reflecting on all of that, there's no place more delightful or lovely than my old hometown of Moose Lake. So I'm really delighted to hear about this book. Well, thanks very much.
Well, thank you for your comment. And by the way, my parents, when they sold the Peck family farm in our home in the village of Marshall, they moved to Minocqua. And my dad died three, four years ago now. And my mom's still living up there. So we get up to Minocqua about once a month to help her out with things. And my sister lives nearby, and she takes care of Mom. But so, yeah, real familiar with Minocqua, too, another small town.
Yeah, and a great small town. I spent a lot of time in Minocqua. Jay, thank you so much for calling. Our guest today, Greg Peck, his book is called Memories of Marshall, Ups and Downs of Growing Up in a Small Town. Join in with your own comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Greg Peck, his latest book is called Memories of Marshall, Ups and Downs of Growing Up in a Small Town, and we're talking about that. What's it like to grow up in a small town? Memories, and certainly I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or memories to share. 1-800-642-1234. That's the number. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. David in La Crosse, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. I was wanting to ask Greg if he uses real names in his book, and even if he used pseudonyms or whatever, from a small town, folks are often able to figure out who you would be talking about. And, of course, ultimately the question is, are you ever worried about being sued for some of the stories you tell about folks?
Well, I don't use pseudonyms. I use their real names. In Death Beyond the Willows, I actually had a couple people who were offended by what I wrote, some of the details about their families. And one of them really was upset, but she lived in California, so I guess, you know, the publisher stood by me, and it didn't become a problem because, you know, truth is a defense. What I was telling were true stories, not falsehoods. And with Memories of Marshall, you know, most of the stories are about me. Some of them are about other people. And if there was a story that I thought someone might be offended by or concerned about, you know, I shared it with that person before I published that book. In fact, there's one about the I was particularly concerned about, which I think is one of the most powerful stories in the book, was about the village barber. And he had several kids who were younger than me, including his only son was a freshman when I was a senior in high school. So I got in touch with Chuck Knoll through someone else that knew him, and I shared that story with him, and he thought it was fine. In fact, he was willing to share a picture of his father that I could put with the story. So, yeah, that can be a concern. I know some people are really reluctant to write stories, nonfiction stories, given people's real names. But if you're telling a good story and it's the truth, then, you know, someone can threaten to sue you, but they're not going to win.
Yeah, there you go, David. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You mentioned the barber. And, you know, this is one of the fun things about reading your book is that it drew my mind to, we had a barber in Cottage Grove, and thinking about getting my hair cut when I was a kid, he would smoke a cigarette while he was cutting your hair, and he would keep that cigarette in, and the ash would get to be like an inch long, and you wondered, how does he keep that ash?
You didn't end up with any small bald spots on the top of your head, did you?
But anyway, the point is that it caused me to think about a time which I hadn't thought of when I was, you know, giving my talk in Cottage Grove, and just a kind of a fun memory in a lot of ways. So sure. I think that's, you don't have to be from Marshall necessarily to enjoy.
No, there was a lady that I met several years ago in Wisconsin Writers Association, and she ordered a copy of the book and then posted a nice little review at Amazon, because it's available at Amazon, although, you know, the profits from a sale through Amazon are much, much smaller than they are if I sell it directly. But she posted this review, and she grew up in Lancaster and had a class of 111. And she said, you know, that the whole thing resonated for her. She said, my 139 Park Drive became her 856 South Adams Street. And my dreams of getting the gang together again were her same dreams. And it inspired her to get back in touch with several of her classmates. And I think that's exciting to hear those kinds of things, you know, and I appreciate that. Likewise, a guy in our neighborhood here, he bought a copy of my book when I was selling him down at the Janesville Farmers Market one Saturday morning. And the next week, I was at the market just shopping, and he ran into me, and he was excited to see me because he said, Greg, you know, I started reading your book, and it's inspired me to pick up a pen and a paper and start writing my own personal history stories. And that's what I hope to do, too. I mean, each book that I sign, I say, save and share your family stories. And if we do that, there'll be a lot more history available to generations to come.
I think that's a wonderful, those are great stories, Greg, for sure. And I hope that, I'm glad to hear it inspired the one gentleman. I hope it inspires more people. Linda in Milton has something for us. Hi, Linda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Well, I also, I didn't actually grow up in the town. I was a farm girl, but I'm actually still in the same area as an adult now, which is kind of nice. I still get to run into some of my old classmates, and it is kind of nice to be where everybody knows your name.
It is indeed, isn't it, Greg?
Yes, it is. I mean, there are maybe some people that you didn't get along with when you were a kid, but I think even like in our class, people that I didn't associate with when I was in high school, you know, maybe there were some clickiness and things like that. You know, all those things are like bygones now. And I love getting together in our class reunions. And, of course, it was supposed to be this year, and it got postponed till next year because of the coronavirus. But, boy, every class reunion now, I'm hoping that I can get around and chat with every person that shows up before they start leaving.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's great to be in a small town and know people and see people you know all the time.
Linda, thank you so much. Let's go to Matt, who's on Highway 19. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Larry. Just wanted to call in and say that I am from Waterloo, and I hate Marshall. I used to. We had such a huge rivalry growing up. Your world was consumed by this rivalry, and I still say go Pirates, but I moved away since then, and those differences seem so petty now as I look back where I lived.
they do, Matt, and one thing about that, what you're saying is that there's a story that I wrote about the basketball teams when Marshall beat Waterloo in a game that the Waterloo Courier, which covered both towns' news, they called it the Battle of the Century. At that time, both schools, I was a freshman at the time, and both schools were in separate conferences, even though they were only 4 miles apart. So they didn't play each other, and both of these teams were conference champions that year. And so, you know, the idea was that the team that wins this game might end up at state, although neither one did. But Marshall fell behind by close to 20 points in the third quarter and rallied to win that game. And it was, I still think it's the most stunning game I've ever seen. You know, I became a sports writer initially as a journalist, and it's still the most amazing comeback I've ever seen because Marshall never even put on a full-court press to get back in that game. And it was just an interesting story to write for that, and I actually wrote it for the Waterloo Courier a number of years ago in an anniversary of that particular game, and it's included in this book. And Al Gosdick is one guy who spent a lot of time in Waterloo, even worked in Waterloo, but grew up in Marshall. And he said, geez, I knew everybody in Waterloo. You know, we wanted to win that game, and it did. So.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You might want to get a copy and take a read on that chapter for sure. Although maybe you won't want to read that chapter. I don't know. You might want to avoid it. Oh, boy. Al in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hey, thanks very much. So, yes, Greg did start out as a sports writer, and then he was promoted to news editor at the Econimalk Enterprise, where I had the good fortune of then becoming sports editor under Greg for like 3 years from 84 to 87.
I know Al's last name.
So,
thanks Greg, for calling, Al. It's good to hear from
Greg
you.
And here's one of the disadvantages to not growing up in a small town. So Greg and the managers had hired a young lady right out of the University of Wisconsin. And I would point out, Larry, that the University of Wisconsin is within visual sight of frozen lakes. So this young lady was from the Chicago suburbs. She bounced in on a January morning, glorious sunny weekend, had just completed, but cold. And she said to the photographer and I in the newsroom, because, of course, Greg wasn't in yet. He was a boss. She says, hey, who lives in all those little houses on the lakes?
Oh, my goodness.
Guys who just love the fish live in those little houses.
Yeah, oh, that's a great story.
Sometimes they might be drinking beer out there, too.
Thanks, Al, for calling. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Thanks, Al. Good to talk to you.
Suzanne in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I had the most wonderful visual memories and just tactile memories of growing up in West Bend, Wisconsin, from 56 to 65. You know, I was just a kid, youngest of five, and then the two more came along. But I was on my bike going down the Milwaukee River looking under rocks for crawdads and, you know, just as a six-year-old. When I was seven or eight, the whole sibling bunch rode our bikes, I don't know, 10 miles out to Wallace Lake. And all my older siblings got way ahead of me, and I was still able to pick my way out there on my little one-seat bike. And, you know, my mom had all her kids at the same hospital, seven kids. We would go up there to McLean, St. Joseph's School on McLean Hill and look up, and she'd hold up the next baby, you know, to show us. And we went and picked out our bikes at a big old dirty barn on the main street. I can't remember the girl's name, but the entire barn was full of bikes and bike parts hanging all across the roofs and walls and all the way down. And somehow through all that mess, we got to pick out our first bikes. Oh. It's just a very simple, loving, rooted, clear life path in a small town like that. Mm. And I have fond memories of it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for sharing that. You know, like I tell about riding my bike all over the place when I was a kid. And in fact, one of the first guys, classmates that died, one day in the summertime, we were dreaming of bicycling across the country. So as a little test run, we decided to bicycle to Watertown and back. So we had to go through Waterloo. It was about, I don't know, 15 miles to Watertown. And we were coming back, and I was having a heck of a time keeping up with him. He was a bigger kid, taller kid, and I just couldn't understand why I couldn't keep up with him. Well, we got back home, and I realized that somehow my bicycle tire had come out of alignment and was rubbing against the fork. So I was pedaling like mad, and I had no coasting ability. That's why I couldn't keep up with him. But as I tell in the book, I don't know as our parents even knew that we did that day. Of course, we didn't have any helmets back then when we were kids. And we survived it, fortunately, but those are just kind of the things we got away with when we were kids.
Yeah. Suzanne, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I want to give Randy a chance to join in, too. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. This is a great discussion. I grew up in North Dakota, where even the big towns were small towns, and when I hear you talking about this, I'm thinking that these were just the glory days of the middle class, when there was this post-war prosperity that kept all these towns going, and now so many towns are losing businesses and things like that. I'm afraid there may be like that silo you have on the cover of your book that you're just about ready to collapse. So that's just one observation. And the other is, do you encounter much small-mindedness in the towns? I mean, you know, small towns have a well-deserved reputation for some very gossipy, insular personalities. I mean, what you see.
I think the gasping was one of the things that my parents really didn't appreciate, even though I think one of my parents actually engaged in some of it. I won't say which one, but, and a lot of people in small towns do not appreciate the gossipy thing. And like I say in the book, everybody knows your business in a small town, and they know your successes and they know your failures. So you know, it can be embarrassing, those failures, but and even I briefly acknowledge that one time I got arrested. It was a night of drinking, but that stuff happens, and in a small town, everybody hears about it, and sometimes you wish they hadn't. But you know, most of us live through it and get beyond it, and look back on it and think, well, shucks, that wasn't such a big deal anymore, you know. So
and those were, I think. Well, do you think they were glory days of the middle class? Randy brought that up.
Well, I think he does have a point there, that there are a lot of small towns that are really struggling to survive if they don't have if they're not close enough to a bigger city where there's enough jobs, or if a small manufacturer or company would be closing where a lot of those people work. Even family farms are going out of business, and some of the support systems, the implement dealers in the mill town, the mills and things like that are in the towns are going out of business, and that all is detrimental to survival of a small town.
Yeah. How has Marshall changed from when you were growing up?
Well, Marshall's changed significantly. One big change it had was when they created the mobile home park. Evergreen Mobile Home Park. I think there were maybe 300 mobile homes put in that park. I actually worked there, as I explain in the book. I was like in a maintenance crew where some of us would mow lawns, although I did a lot of lawn mowing when I was a kid because we had a riding mower. So I wasn't really interested in doing that. And we built aluminum storage sheds for each mobile home, and I actually enjoyed doing that. And even like on garbage day, we would help the trash man collect the trash in the mobile home park. But that added a lot of people there. I know, you know, with McCain Nursery being so close by, a lot of Hispanic families moved to town. And plus, Marshall has the advantage of being close enough to Madison where people can commute to Madison. In fact, my dad drove truck for Swift Meats until they closed their terminal in Madison and wanted to transfer to St. Paul, and he didn't want to do that. So then he ended up getting a job at what was Wisconsin Bell at that time, and eventually retired as a Meritech retiree. So, yeah, he commuted to Madison for decades. Always had really small cars, economical, Corvairs. He had two of those, a Vega. That helps Marshall out. And Marshall has grown. I don't know what the population is now, but I think it's close to 2,000 or 3,000 at least. When I drive through Marshall, some parts now, there are whole subdivisions that I've never been in, and I get lost. No, I don't even know which street gets me back to the main street sometimes. So it really has grown. So,
well, and changed a lot for sure. But there are still a lot of good memories that you have of growing up. One of the things that struck me was you were writing about festivals and the Marshall Festival.
Yes, that's really, the Marshall Festival was the highlight of the year, the social event of the year. And like I said, I grew up a stone's throw from Fireman's Park, so I can remember with me and my buddies, as soon as the first festival truck arrived on festival week, we'd race down there with our bicycles, and we'd be talking to them, find out which rides they're going to bring. We were all excited about that, and watch the whole festival go up. And then disassembly later, but But it really was the cultural event where people got to know each other and people got caught up with, you know, how the crops are doing and how the football team is going to be this fall and how the kids are doing going to do in school this year and that kind of thing. And little by little, the interest in the festival waned. And one thing that hurt it was Little America, built by a guy named Lee Merrick, who died since he built that place. But he has an amusement park there just on the outskirts of the village, and it has rides. Well, with rides being available year-round to village kids, the rides at the festival were no longer such a great attraction. And so when the rides weren't bringing riders, the amusement company decided not to bring the rides anymore, and that started to create the demise of the festival, which just died just 2 or 3 years ago. And it really was sad because it brought the whole community together. My dad was briefly a volunteer firefighter, but he sold raffle tickets. We'd go farm to farm selling raffle tickets. My mom and my dad both worked either in the bingo tent or in the hamburger stand tent or in the raffle tent through the years. And so, you know, everybody was supporting the volunteer fire department. And, of course, that's just a major revenue source that is no longer there with the demise of the festival.
I was, when you said it was the highlight, social highlight of the year, I thought to myself, that's exactly right. The Cottage Grove Festival was kind of the social highlight.
Sure. I went to the Cottage Grove Festival, and we went to the Deerfield Festival, too. And even, like, the Sun Prairie had the Sweet Corn Festival. But, yeah, we visited the Deerfield and the Cottage Grove once, too, when I was a kid.
They're all part of some great memories, Greg. Now, I have to tell you, just as a sidelight here as we end, that Ed, your brother, graduated from my department at the University of Wisconsin. And it was fun for me to see, to realize, oh, they're brothers. So that was kind of cool, too. I hope Ed has a chance to have heard you today. And I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. It's a lot of fun talking with you about your book. How do we get the book? It's available at Amazon, but how else do we get it?
It is available at Amazon, or you can contact me directly through my email. It's Greg Amazon Michael Peck at sbcglobal.net. And I can tell you what my address is and what the price is to ship it to you. I can sign and send it to you for $17.95. In fact, I already sent one to Belgium in Europe. It was a lady whose mother ran a restaurant in Marshall, and she was adamant about getting this book. It cost more to ship it than the price of the cover of the book itself, but we made it work.
That's great.
And also it's available at the hardware store in Marshall, Hillenbrand Hardware Store, which anybody that's in Marshall knows exactly where that is, and at He and She Hair Salon. It's available here in Janesville at Book World, and I just got some at Raven's Wish Art Gallery downtown yesterday. And like I said, or you can contact me directly at Greg M. Peck at sbcglobal.net, and I'd be happy to send one to you.
Greg, thank you so much. I really appreciate talking with you. It was a lot of fun.
It has been, Larry. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Greg Peck, his book is titled Memories of Marshall, Ups and Downs of Growing Up in a Small Town. It was fun talking with him for sure. Well, do you have a guilty pleasure, something that you like to do, but you wonder, you know, it's kind of a guilty pleasure. Let's put it that way. We're going to talk about guilty pleasures next on the Ideas Network, and maybe you'll have a chance to talk with us about your guilty pleasure. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.